As may be clear to you by now, my topic this morning is the role of games in our lives, and the role specifically of video games in our society. I am well aware that this is not a usual topic for a Sunday service at even a liberal faith tradition. But as video games seem to have had created a lasting foothold in our culture, and they may have, and people are played by a wide variety of people of all ages, I think they're worthy of our attention. And before I continue, I want to make sure that you know that all of Nathan's selections this morning are taken from the scores of video games. Such games may or may not be your cup of tea, but I hope that you will recognize that the genre is not devoid of at least some fine artistry. Thank you, Nathan. I've chosen a longer than usual passage for our first reading today for the way it conveys one gamer's experience playing a game called Mass Effect. This is from Tom Bissell's book, Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter.
A late Mass Effect mission involves an assault on an enemy stronghold. While you are discussing your strategy, a revelation of what is inside the stronghold causes one of your squad mates to object to the mission's purpose, which could place the survival of his race in peril. Your attempt to reason with him along the good of the many lines causes him to march off. When you walk over to talk some sense into him, the conversation quickly escalates and, suddenly, you find yourself in a standoff. The first time I played Mass Effect, I had grown immensely fond of the aggrieved character, and each time a new conversation option appeared, I felt a noose of real dramatic concern tighten. Because I had not invested my skill points in areas of persuasion needed to convince the squad member to relent, the encounter ended with my squad mate dead at my feet. I reloaded my last saved game and tried again. Once more, my friend and teammate took a bullet for his trouble. In my bewilderment, I pressed on, and when the menu for squad selection came up, the slot for the dead character was now a darkened silhouette. It seemed as stark and inarguably final as a tombstone. Later in the same mission, I was confronted with the loss of another squad member. This time, there was no way out. Two of my teammates were trapped, and only one could be saved. I had been relying on the firepower and battle prowess of one of the trapped teammates throughout the game, and the other was someone whom my avatar in the game was romancing. Thus, the game took my own self-interest and effectively vivisected it. When decision time came, I literally put down my controller and stared at the screen. This is how games get inside you. Murder mysteries in which you must hunt for clues, and love stories in which you have to choose. When games do this poorly, or even inadequately, the sensation is that of a slightly caffeinated immediacy. You have agency, yes, but what of it? It is just a game. But when a game does this well, you lose track of your manipulation of it, and instead feel inserted so deeply inside the game that your mind and your feelings become as seemingly crucial to its operation as its many millions of lines of code. It is the sensation that the game itself is as suddenly, unknowably alive as you are. As I sat there trying to figure out what to do, Mass Effect, despite its 300,000-word script and beautiful graphics, was no longer a verbal or visual experience, was no longer that but a full-body experience. I felt a tremendous sense of preemptive loss and anxiety, and even called my girlfriend, described my dilemma, and asked for her counsel. "You do know," she said, "that you're crazy, yes?" On the face of things, she was right. Here I was, a straight man, worrying over the consummation of my female avatar's love affair. But my girlfriend was also wrong. To say that any game that allows such surreally intense feelings of attachment and projection is divorced from questions of human identity, choice, and empathy, what is and always will be the proper domain of art, is to miss the point, not only of such a game, but art itself. I made my choice. The game, nodding inconclusively, went on.
Our second and shorter reading this morning is from Jane McGonigal's book, Reality is Broken. It has nothing directly to do with video games, but it does speak to the possibility of living playfully.
Whenever I walk through the front door of my apartment, I enter an alternate reality. It looks and works just like regular reality, with one major exception. When I want to clean the bathroom, I have to be really sneaky about it. If my husband thinks I'm going to scrub the tub on Saturday morning, he'll have to wake up early, tiptoe out of the bathroom, and silently beat me to it. But I've lived in this alternate reality long enough to have developed a highly effective counter-strategy. I clean the bathroom at odd hours in the middle of the week when he's least expecting it. The more random the hour, the more likely I am to complete the chore before he does. And if this strategy ever starts to fail? Well, let's just say that I am not above hiding the toilet brush. Why exactly are we competing with each other to do the dirty work? We're playing a free online game called Chore Wars. And it just so happens that ridding our real world kingdom of toilet stains is worth more experience points than any other chore in the land of the 41st floor ninjas, which is what we've dubbed our apartment in the game. Thank you.
All right, let's check this out. I've got some notes. I may need to run to the podium to check on something, but I really just want to talk to you folks today. But, you know, video games seems like a stretch, so let me ask and get a sense of how much trouble I've gotten myself into. How many of you have played video games and consider yourself even a lightweight gamer? Well, I may not be in such an evil crowd that I thought. How many people for whom the term video games, it just evokes this sort of wasted potential and ugh, and why would I want to do that? That's what I expected. That's what I expected. So, you know, one of the good things about this is sort of lift things up and lift people's experience up for a little reflection, and I'm outing myself today as a video gamer. In case you hadn't figured that out, that's going to be clear. To start, we're talking about games, we're talking about a life of which there is play, and we're talking about video games. And we're going to see if we can weave all of these things together. And to start, I want to start by just sort of setting out for you three scenarios. All real things that have happened. The first is, in my first ministry, there was a young man named Mac, and he had graduated from high school. He had a younger daughter, Mary. They lived about an hour and a half up the side of a mountain, south of Livermore, California, outside of a town, the closest town called Patterson. It took me an hour and a half on windy roads to reach their house. Both Mac and his sister, Mary, were homeschooled. I was there to talk to Mary and her mother about some problems Mary was having, and after a while, we were winding things up, and I said, you know, it's a long way back. Can I use your restroom? They pointed me down the hall. I went down the hall, and I'm walking down the hall just as Mac comes out the door to his room. And he came out looking like a white wraith, and he saw me and just did that. This was in the afternoon. He had been playing video games since probably 7 o'clock the night before. And he was white, and he was startled. And I was like, ooh, if that's what gamers do, that's really not very attractive. And I had, for the first time, this is an old-fashioned word that I don't use. It's not in my active vocabulary. The word pity. I found myself pitying Mac. Because, at least at that moment, the way it looked to me was he was spending all his time playing video games. And that was his life. And, you know, life can be more than that. The second little scenario I want to paint for you, I'm serving the same congregation, and I don't remember if this was a Thanksgiving party or a graduation party, but there was some social church event, and I was there with maybe 15, 20 people in the congregation. We were at someone's house, and we had the meal, and we were going to play charades. You all know charades? Well, there was a couple in their 70s that had lived most of their life in New England, and they came up to me, the husband, and said, Eric, I've never played charades. How do you play it? I had never encountered someone who didn't know the game charades. I'm a really lousy player. I'm just not that quick. And so that they were asking me what the rules were was really quite atrocious. But I was like, oh, and it was so fun to be with them as they learned the game and awkwardly put themselves out. It was just wonderful, wonderful to watch. These people learning a new game in their 70s. This third scenario happened in the first month of my professional ministry. Now, you have to know I have a birthday at the end of August. You know, I'm expecting birthday presents. And I had just started, and I was such an earnest young minister. I was wanting to do what St. Paul said in Corinthians of doing away with all the childish things, and I'm going to be mature now. And what does my brother do? He ruins me for the rest of my life. He sends me a birthday present of, you guessed it, a video game. Sid Meier's Civilization II had just came out for the Mac. You start as sort of this master of a little civilization in the year 6000 BCE. And you develop that civilization, you explore it, you found new towns, new cities, you maybe have wars with some people who are wanting your land, your crops, and you take that civilization through the Stone Age all the way through the year 2100. And hopefully you've achieved space mastery. And this was fun. I would come to bed at 2 or 2:30, and my ex would say, and I would say, oh, I was up reading. She's like, no, you weren't. You were gaming. I could hear the little explosions. And I said, oh, I had the volume turned down to 1. I heard you. Come to bed. I tried to do away with childish things, but they've just kept creeping up. Video games are really popular. This June, it was announced at a video game conference in Las Vegas or someplace. Worldwide this year, $65 billion will go into this industry. This is a huge amount. The passage that Steve read earlier, the script for the first Mass Effect game, 300,000 words. War and Peace has 500,000. A lot of work has gone into these. A lot of work for language, for music, for beautiful graphics. But the work is to engage the player. A lot of work is done, and I can tell you, they're seductive. I don't play every day, I don't play every week. There will be months at a time where I don't play, and then again, every now and then, the jag comes back, and I'm playing. Hopefully I have a little distance. I started playing at the beginning of the summer again, just to do a little research for this talk. Jane McGonigal, in her book that came out in January, titled Reality is Broken, and who wrote the passage of the alternate reality game she and her husband play called Chore Wars. Jane is a gamer, a game designer, and she talks about all the good things that games do for gamers. And I say, She talks about they learn to collaborate, those who play online games. She talks about how they learn to cooperate, who play in co-op mode, something I had never heard of before. I'm not so sure about the skills being easily transferred from in front of a screen to real world. I think of Mac specifically when I think of that. But she references some work that I read a long time ago by a formerly head of the Department of Psychology at the University of Chicago, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, and I know I'm murdering the Hungarian. Please forgive me. If someone knows it better, raise their hand. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. He's now doing work at the Drexler Institute at the Claremont College in Pomona, California, but he had been in Chicago. And he talked about flow starting as early as 1975. This was the state that athletes and musicians get in. Athletes, when they're in the zone, you hear that when you watch, you listen to people who are running marathons or at the Olympics, are they in the zone or not? You get in the zone, which is like an effortless space that you're in, where everything just works. And your actions are exactly in tune with your intentions. And it's just like magic is happening. Musicians often experience that, I think. I've heard. I can't trust not being a musician. Artists sometimes, when they're making art. And she sent me high, said, you know, there are things that help this. Clear feedback. Immediate, clear feedback, repeated, that there is an endorphin juice created. And after a time of studying flow and flow experience, he says, you know, sometimes this is a state of positive psychology that we really need to study. This is people at their best. We're at our best when we're experiencing this. Maybe what we need to be doing is helping one another have these experiences. This is what video games do. But in a video game, even if you're wired talking to people playing in a massively multiple, what's the phrase? And who knows what an MMO stands for? I'm forgetting it. Hold on, say this again so I can get it. Massively multiplayer, that's the word I was forgetting, forgive me. Massively multiplayer online role-playing game. I can be playing, and I've done this with, I was here, but when I was in Rochester, I'd have play dates with a friend in California, and we would be playing with other characters, who knows where they were. Kind of fun. But we need ways to transfer those flow-like experiences, which are so carefully designed for in games, to real life. I like what McGonagall does in Reality is Broken, although I disagree with her premise, because she's saying, well, let's talk about alternate reality games. Chores Wars was one. Let's make our lives a little more playful. And, you know, we Chore Wars, that gives us this, it's kind of laughable. She's been helping develop other alternative reality games to actually help trying to improve the world in which we live. She was involved a couple years ago with a game called World Without Oil, where you don't play an avatar, you play yourself with, I think there were 1,500 players, imagining what would I do in my life if peak oil was like that and there was no more gas. How would I live? And people started actively imagining that and helping one another come up with ways. I'm going to bicycle to work. I'm going to take out the grass in my front yard and I'm going to plant vegetables. I was like, oh, maybe she's onto something. Maybe there are things we can learn from with this. Back to notes, just a second. So my interest is in how we can learn to live more engaged lives. Maybe there are lessons we can take from video games. I love, just as an aside, one of these lines from Mass Effect said something to the effect of, there are no reliable galactic dating services. If you want romance, you need to go out and talk to people. True in the game, true in life, no? Tom Bissell, who wrote the passage that Steve read, wrote about playing Mass Effect and devoted a chapter in his book, Extra Lives, to each game, or one of several games that he was involved in. The last chapter of the book is his playing a game called Grand Theft Auto, which I haven't touched. In case you don't know, there are a lot of wide variety kinds of games. Grand Theft Auto is just about as gritty as it comes. And he talks about his addiction to cocaine while he was playing Grand Theft Auto. And I'd like to read you just a short excerpt as he closes. And this is after he has stopped taking cocaine. He asks, so what have games given me? Experiences. Not surrogate experiences, but actual experiences, many of which are as important to me as any real memories. Once I wanted games to show me things I could not see in any other medium. Then I wanted games to tell me a story in a way no other medium could. Then I wanted games to redeem something absent in myself. Then I wanted a game experience that pointed not to but at something. Playing Grand Theft Auto 4 on coke for weeks and then months at a time, I learned that maybe all a game can do is point at the person who is playing it. And maybe this has to be enough. In closing, I'll just offer a couple other points. In my time in professional ministry, I have developed two habits that completely surprised me. I started reading mystery novels. I hated the genre. I was an English major. I never read a mystery novel. I read it because at the end, everything's tidy and neat. And you know what? That experience is really rare in mystery. Just about as rare in ministry as it is in real life. And I started playing video games because video games give me, when you start playing a game with 300,000 words and all kinds of options, the options at first can be overwhelming. But because of the cues and the game's clear design, you find yourself mastering the game. And when I play games now, I realize, oh, I'm wanting that experience of knowing that I'm good at something. Because life doesn't always give us those kinds of feedback. And sometimes it's good to feel like you've got something down pat, even if it's just on a screen in front of you. So when Mass Effect 3, the final game in the trio, is released next spring, next March, I think, if I'm a little bleary-eyed one morning, and I say to you I was up reading late at night the night before, you can say, was it fun? Thank you. Thank you.